We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
And boo. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, presented by Progressive Insurance, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. So much going on in this country. Positive momentum for change in how we are perceived, what is and isn't true, and what we, the realities we all need to face that all of us growing up did not have to face, but we have to recognize that other people did. So much positive. So much positive momentum for the NBA, the NHL, college football, the NFL, trying to get something and get ready to go. And at a time where we should be watching all of these things unfolding on the diamonds across the country because Major League Baseball season is here, we got nothing.
We got nothing.
We got nothing from Major League Baseball.
We got a battle between the players and the league, basically over games and over money, and here to try and break it all down for us, Buster Olney, our ESPN baseball insider. And Buster, I mean, listen, we don't even know what to say anymore. What the hell is going on?
Well, here's the thing, is that this now has dragged on for so long that even if they get a resolution this week, and there are flickers of hope that that might happen, they've already done enormous damage to the sport. The fact that they have ceded the opportunity to be the first ones to own the stage by themselves, because all these other sports have moved along and have begun preparation, and a lot of people are focused on the NBA, on the NHL, you know, on the NFL. That opportunity is lost. And my goodness, every time there's a story or a tweet from a player or some reaction from the management side, I always like to go on social media and see what the responses are. You know, I posted a story yesterday about this situation, and the responses from fans are, I'm done. They've lost me. I've had it. They're dead. You know, they're dead to me, that sort of thing. And while that can be overstated, as one longtime person on the player side said to me recently, it's like everybody forgot what happened in 94-95, the labor stoppage, attendance dropping 20% after they came back, TV ratings going down. And that was at a time of relative national prosperity. Not everything we've seen going on here. Both sides have been incredibly tone deaf. Both sides have done damage to the sport, as they say, even if they were to come back.
Buster, so I will hold on to it a little bit here.
Yeah.
What are the flickers of hope that you mentioned there?
Yeah, please, flicker us.
Well, there is some expectation on the player side that the owners will try to come to them with a proposal early in the week. I wrote yesterday that really, the way this needs to be resolved, if in fact they're going to get a collaborative, cooperative agreement, is that the owners, who have the most access to wealth, who are the long-term stewards of the game, they need to step out into the middle ground where neither side is really gone and make a significant concession in regards to money. And if that happens, then the Players Association leadership needs to recognize that and not only grab onto that and build on that as going forward, but I think it's important that they work for more than just a one-time victory. In other words, try to trade some short-term financial concessions to prop up their free agency, their free agents this fall and next year, in order to further this conversation, because a one-time resolution now where the players can walk away and hold up their arms and say, yahoo, we got our money for 2020. Look, it would only defer the larger labor conversations that would happen next spring and next year with the expiration of the CBA. I've been shocked at how little big picture thinking that's been going on. I thought back in April that the two sides really should be focused on a larger conversation, fold what's happening this year, next year, into the next CBA. That has not taken place. I have no expectation that'll happen, and it's really a missed opportunity.
Buster Olney with us this morning. And Buster, missed opportunity is like the nicest way we could possibly say what's happening with Major League Baseball.
They blew it.
We are seeing, yeah, they blew it. You're exactly right. We have seen so many people reacting to what's going on in this country and realizing, hey, things need to change. The way we do business and the way we've handled things before are not acceptable going forward. And you're telling me in the midst of all of this that baseball is still stuck in the way they were some 20, 25 years ago?
I think so. And look, the tone-deaf statements on both sides tell you that. You know, Blake Snell, with what he said at a time when, at that time, there were over 20 million people had lost their jobs. That's now over 40 million people. Last week, you know, Tom Ricketts, the chairman of the Cubs, like Blake Snell, you know, when Tom Ricketts came out and spoke last week, there certainly were elements of truth in what he was talking about. But in reading the story, the great story that was done by my colleague Jesse Rogers, I was just shaking my head thinking, wait a second. All these people have lost their jobs. So many people have lost their lives. Family are dealing with loss. You have protests all around the country, and you have a billionaire talking about his cash flow problem? No. People are not going to want to hear it. And that's why I've been using this line. I'll use it for you guys, that the owners and the players right now are like two-second cousins yelling loudly at each other in the back pew at a memorial service. And everyone is looking at them embarrassed going, well, what are you doing? And I wish there had been recognition of that and that they had been able to at least, at the very least, tamp down their disagreement to the point that they do it behind closed doors.
Talking to our ESPN MLB insider Buster Olney with us here on Golic and Wingo as the cousins fight in the back of the service. And Buster, let's take that's the MLB so good. PA side of that cousin equation. You said going forward, they've got to have a little bit more of a big picture goal in mind. Well, you tend to be able to see better going forward when you've analyzed what's already happened. What can the Baseball Players Association do to put themselves in a better position to not get in this spot again?
Yeah, Junior, I really feel like that both sides, whenever they get the resolution of what's going to happen in 2020, both sides need to do an internal audit and assessment of how they got to this place that they have such a toxic, destructive relationship with the other side. On the player's side, they really have not done a full assessment of the damage that was done by their leadership in their 2016 CBA agreement. They lost hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in the financial landscape. And in that strategy in 2016, just as it is now, is brinkmanship. Well, maybe that doesn't work. Maybe there's a better way to do it. You know, previous labor leaders have done more of the barter and talk over long-term type approach. I think they have to take a look at the metrics of where player salaries have gone down in recent years. And on the owner side, look, they might be saying, why are the players so suspicious of us? Why is there no trust? Well, maybe it's because
history.
Of the tanking. Yeah, tanking and service time manipulation. And the best example of that to me, I'm going to tell you about George Springer of the Astros, okay? His career began in bad faith. He should have been called up in the summer of 2013. He had an OPS in the minor league. He was a first-round pick, OPS over 1,000. He was killing it, and he wasn't called up at the end of that year. He wasn't called up until that magic mid-April date in April 16th when suddenly he was a major leaguer. And because of that, his free agency was delayed by a year. He should have been a free agent last fall, along with Anthony Rendon and Strasburg and Gerrit Cole, and he should have gotten $150 to $200 million. Well, now look what's happened. When he's a free agent this fall, he'll never get close to getting any of that money back. And if baseball were to restart, think about this, guys. If it were to restart in a shortened 50-game season, if he plays one or two days, then he would reach his free agency. Would anyone disagree with the logic that George Springer could just show up for a couple days and then take it to the house to protect himself against a possible injury? Those are the dynamics, I think, that the owners have contributed to with some of these draconian use of metrics and things like service time manipulation, like tanking.
So you say, that'll be great about auditing books, and no matter what set of books you give them.
Yeah.
So real quick, know you got to get going, Buster. If there was a palatable number of games that the owners could give to the players for their prorated salaries, what number do you think that would end at?
I think it's going to be a short-term season unless the two sides truly step out in the middle ground and truly negotiate. I would not be surprised if we wind up with something like a 50-60-game season. There is some thought that there could be grievances that could stem from this because the way this has been negotiated. And I wouldn't be surprised if the owners go beyond the 50 games just to in anticipation of that, to show some measure of good faith. I do think there's going to be baseball this year, and I think there's a good chance it's going to be a mess, and it's going to be very passive-aggressive and with some Ferris Buellering going on the player side.
Well, listen, it's June 8th. Early June is running out pretty quickly. Yeah, we're getting into mid-June here, so they need to step on the gas if it's going to happen. Buster, as always, we appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Ferris Bueller analogy and two second cousins fighting in the back of a memorial service. Awesome analogies.
You learn a lot as a dairy farmer in Vermont, apparently, about life. And Buster Olney has nailed that for sure. Coming up, the most tenured coach at the highest level of college football is facing perhaps the biggest test of his entire career. We will get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
I think that we are barreling toward a reopening.
We haven't been told that we can't do anything and that we can't move forward to plan for the fall.
It's not the AD's decision here. It's not the coach's decision. It's not even these medical officials that will be making the decision. Ultimately, it comes down to the president.
When it comes to athletics, one school is not going to make the call. The conference has to agree, and we have to work to some kind of agreement that we can all find acceptable.
Golgan Wingo with you on a Monday morning. Glad you're with us. Reminding you to tune in tonight as The Undefeated presents 3 hours of programming dedicated to social justice. Included are town halls from Chicago and Birmingham and Playing for Justice, a behind-the-scenes look at the criminal justice system through the eyes of the NBA players. It all starts at 8 p.m. Eastern tonight on ESPN. So that's something to look forward to tonight. Meanwhile, college football is trying to meander its way back to getting athletes on campus and when things can open and when you can do this and when you can do that, depending on what your state's regulations are in the pandemic. But one thing we saw over the weekend was, once again, Junior, something that you pointed out to on several occasions, players understanding their platform and players understanding their power. And over the weekend, in a response to what we've seen across this country, several former Iowa players decided they felt the need to speak out on something that made them feel very uncomfortable was the word that we heard a lot from so many of these former players when they had some interaction specifically with one coach on the Iowa football staff. That would be Chris Doyle, the strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah, it started James Daniels, one of the high draft picks from the
Mike Daniels.
James Daniels started.
Oh, you're right.
Out of
you're
the
right. Sorry,
player.
Sorry. Yes. You are right.
One of the offensive line draft picks from Iowa to the Chicago Bears,
right,
talking about some racial disparities that have existed at Iowa. Mike Daniels then jumped in and also started to co-sign a lot of this. And you saw a number of players, including former Iowa defensive back Emmanuel Rigamba, who transferred to Miami of Ohio, alleging two instances of this involving Chris Doyle, the strength and conditioning coach. And that's where a lot of it seemed to center, the conversation that had started amongst these players on social media about the treatment in the strength and conditioning program from the long time strength and conditioning head coach Chris Doyle. And the backdrop for all of this is interesting as we dive into this. We've talked so much about college athletes realizing their platform, college athletes understanding their voice. Iowa's going to be a very unique case study in this because you've got one of the things that is super rare in college football now, which is a long-tenured head coach with the kind of respect and influence that Kirk Ferentz has at that program, and also one that has a lot less reliance on one or two star players, right? What we've seen is the Trevor Lawrences of the world, Marvin Wilson, these guys that their teams rely on to succeed. Iowa hasn't really been built like that in recent memory where you've got one or two stars to hang your hat on. And so the former players being willing to speak out about this is a huge thing for a program where it has got to be difficult in there right now if you're a kid being asked to potentially weigh in on the future of people that have been around there and are as ingrained in that program as Chris Doyle and Kirk Ferentz.
It's so true. People don't realize, unless you are one of those top guys coming out, the power that a head coach and maybe something else people don't recognize. A lot of times, the second most powerful person is a strength and conditioning coach.
Yep.
That is a lot of times the right-hand man of the head coach because, especially during the summer months, the head coach can't be around. It is run by the strength and conditioning coach. They are powerful. When pro teams come in to talk to coaches about players, a lot of times they talk to the strength and conditioning coach. And those guys will be honest at times. And if they have something against somebody, they'll let it be known. They will spit it out there. And Doyle has been part of that program since 99, spanning the entire Kirk Ferentz tenure there. He's the highest paid strength coach in the country at $800,000 a year. And now players, I think of where the time we are, players are feeling more and more emboldened to speak up. And you mentioned the one player. There was another player. Terrence Pryor said black athletes had to deal with many racist incidents. He said during his time there, including an incident he had with Doyle, which he alleges a strength coach told him, maybe you should take up rowing or something you know. Oh, wait. Black people don't like boats and waters, do they? He said that was one of the instances where at times black athletes felt very uncomfortable around him. And then Doyle came out with a statement. Mike, you and I both started reading that and thought it was going to be a way different ending than what it was.
Well, he made that statement, a relief statement, after Kirk Ferentz put him on administrative leave pending a review.
Right.
So basically Kirk Ferentz said we need to take a hard pause here. And they put Chris Doyle on administrative leave, and then he released that statement.
He did, and here was Kirk Ferentz's reaction to all of this, the players hearing what the players had said about Chris Doyle, their strength coach.
Junior said that video spoke volumes, and the reason that it spoke
that's
volumes...
That's the wrong sound. Guys, hold on. That's the wrong sound.
That is Marty Smith right there. Yeah. We need Kirk Ferentz talking about the reactions of players against Chris Doyle.
There's been a call for a cultural shift in our program. Therefore, I'm creating an advisory committee chaired by a former player and compromised of current and former players, as well as departmental staff. This will be a diverse group that will be able to share without judgment so we can all examine where we are today and how we can have a better environment tomorrow. Football is a game of discipline and sacrifice. In our program, we have high standards, accountability, and we have a good team of players, coaches, and staff members. But it's clear we can all do more to creating a better environment, a respectful environment, one where every player can grow, develop, and become the best version of himself.
Mike Daniels, who we mentioned before, by the way,
right,
is going to lead that advocacy group and be a part of an advocacy group for the improvement and for the treatment of black players in that program. So he's going to be the name associated with that. But yeah, as he mentioned, there are going to be things going into this. And Chris Doyle then came out, like we mentioned, with a statement that, boy, if you stopped reading it halfway through, you thought we might have been on to something.
Correct. If he just left off the last paragraph, it might have been okay.
So the statement starts, for 21 years, I've committed my life to Iowa football and love with all my heart every single one of the young men I've gotten to work with and every minute we've spent together in the weight room, on the field, and as friends and fellow Hawkeyes. I can only imagine how much courage it took for them to speak out on these serious matters. I'm proud of them. My job's to give feedback to our players for 21 years now, and I'm receiving feedback myself. I can take it and I won't hide from it. It saddens me to hear the stories of their difficult experiences while in our program, in addition to the outpouring of stories we're hearing across the country. It's time to listen, learn, and grow. Most importantly, it's time for action.
Perfect.
If you cut it there,
yes,
we all think this is going a very different way for a coach that right now has his job on the line.
Correct.
What follows is going to make the rest of how that conversation goes very difficult. I have been asked to remain silent, but that's impossible for me to do so. There have been statements made about my behavior that are not true. I don't claim to be perfect. I've made mistakes, learned lessons, and like every American citizen, can do better. At no time have I ever crossed the line of unethical behavior or bias based upon race. I do not make racist comments, and I don't tolerate people who do. I'm confident that a complete review of the body of work over 21 years will speak for itself, and I'm trusting the process to respect the rights and experiences of all parties involved. There are countless men of character who are better fathers, husbands, activists, leaders, and contributors to society due to their experience at Iowa football. The record will show this. Chris Doyle.
Look, I believe that in his mind, he believes that to be true. But if you go back to the sentence before that, it's time to listen, learn, and grow. And if you have, what, how many people now? At least five coming forward and saying, you made statements that made me feel uncomfortable, and then you release this statement, you're not really listening.
Well, you're also not giving yourself a good chance to keep your job going forward, if that's your goal, because that was a hard line in the sand, right?
Yeah.
Like, the second half of that statement was, I have not done any of the things that are being alleged. I have not made racial comments or things that would make people uncomfortable in the ways that are being claimed. And so what it's essentially become is that sort of he said, multiple he said. Like, it is now going to be Chris Doyle's word judged against what players are coming out and saying at a time where players' voices have never had more power in this particular instance than there. And I heard reporting yesterday from Adam Rittenberg, who mentioned that on a call, Kirk Ferentz talking to the media on a Zoom call said, this is going to be something that is handled by an outside committee looking at this. Gary Barta, their AD, would be coordinating an external review of the strength and conditioning program and of Coach Doyle. So it sounds like this isn't going to be a decision that Kirk Ferentz gets to make in all of this.
And Kirk Ferentz supposedly was proactive in this after the tweet came out from James Daniels that said there are too many racial disparities in the Iowa football program. Black players have been treated unfairly. Kirk Ferentz said he began contacting former players, and that continued throughout the weekend. He said, if I had one major takeaway from this weekend, it would be the value of reaching out to players who have played in the program, who care about the program, but are removed from the program. They feel a bit more free to speak candidly. I don't want to say I was blindsided, but some comments that I've heard from some of our guys, the bottom line is we don't want anybody to leave here not feeling like this was a good experience for them. So you wonder if more and more players are going to start coming out now. And because he is right, if you're removed from the program, you may feel a little more free to speak, because there was a player who said he spoke up during his time there when Chris Doyle mentioned that he was going to send him back to the ghetto. And then this player called him out right there in front of the team, and Kirk Ferentz suspended the player for shouting down Chris Doyle in front of all the team for that.
Here's the problem with that statement, right? As you just, if he just said it's time to stop and learn and listen and grow, he might have been okay. Because here is what Anthony Heron, a former Iowa Hawkeye, had to say on ESPN Radio about Doyle's remarks and what he actually thinks of Doyle as a person.
I can't say I'm shocked by stories that have come out from former players, because Chris Doyle is one of many people that just in that setting can at times have an inappropriate sense of humor about things. But to me, stereotyping and racism, while the area between can be gray depending on how far something goes, I view them as two separate things as it relates to some of the things Chris Doyle said. And I don't think those are things he would ever say to white football players at Iowa. But do I view Chris Doyle as some sort of a raving racist? No. But do I think so many things that he said to former players, to black players, can make them uncomfortable, should make them uncomfortable, are beyond reproach? Yes. Yes, I do.
And that's the problem. Like, I mean, in that statement, Chris says it's time to listen, and then he goes on to say, but I'm not listening.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest issue. And let's not be clear, this is not the first time that there's been an issue surrounding Chris Doyle. You guys remember in 2011, what, 13 Iowa players were hospitalized from the overstrenuous workouts?
Right.
I can't remember the name of the disease.
Rhabdo.
Yeah, thank you.
Right.
Whatever it was, where it got in. I mean, basically some proteins got into places where they weren't supposed to be, and 13 players got hospitalized because they were those workouts were too severe. So we'll see what happens going forward. But again, if that statement had just stopped with, it's time to learn and listen, it might be in a much better place for Chris Doyle in terms of his future with the Iowa Hawkeyes. All right, Golden Wingo here with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Sirius XM Channel 80. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golick, Mike Golick Jr., Trey Wingo here. So it was a very busy week for the NFL in a time when it is usually not that busy, where it's some mini camps maybe or some OTAs and then getting ready for the little hiatus before the beginning of training camps at the end of the July or the end of July, because the July is not a thing. So normally, but like everything else that's going on in the country, the NFL is reacting to the widespread demonstrations for change in the way things are done in the handling of people of color by those in authority. And the NFL released that statement from the players, and then Roger Goodell released his statement the following day, and there's been a ton of reaction going forward. So for some insight on all of this, we're delighted to be joined now by our newest ESPN NFL reporter, Kimberly Martin. Kimberly, good morning. Welcome. We're glad you're part of the family. Thanks for being with us. What has been your reaction to sort of everything that's happened over the last 72 hours in the NFL?
Good morning. Good morning. Despite my chipperness, it's exhausting. This has been a crazy, crazy week. Drew Brees that was quite a 180 in less than 48 hours. Trump's multiple statements to Brees, to Goodell. I think we still have 3 months until the season starts, presumably. But the issues that players are talking about, from Black Lives Matter and racism and systematic oppression of people of color, are again in the forefront of the sports landscape. And now we have the president talking about the kneeling during the anthem. So that's going to be a continued storyline if the NFL doesn't wrap its arms around it very quickly.
So while we saw Roger Goodell's video, we know he works for the owners and that he only included maybe a handful of owners in about this video. So let's go there, because is there going to be some sort of power struggle with the owners over this?
That's a great question, because I think the reaction has been so strong towards Roger Goodell. Either, some people think he's a hypocrite. Some people are praising him for that kind of unprecedented video apology, if you will. But again, like you said, he represents the owners. There are 32 teams that he represents their interests and what they, you know, what they believe, what they're aligned with. So while Roger's out there taking some of the shrapnel, we also have to recognize that he's doing other people's bidding. And so I'm curious how this plays out, because I think there's a financial component to all of this discussion. You know, the NFL is a business. Owners care about making money, as all business people do. They're billionaires. The coronavirus pandemic has halted business, has halted revenue, and it's going to have lasting impact into, you know, the 2021 salary cap. All these things are going to be affected. So when you talk about TV ratings and are fans going to have the same reaction, that's worthy of discussion. But when I spoke to a lot of, whether it be GMs, players, personnel guys this past week, some of them believe, a lot of them actually believe that owners are starting to see what players are saying. Executives are starting to see, okay, I get it now. They've quote unquote seen the light. Now, again, this is 3 months until we have to think about football games, and whether fans are in the stadium. But I don't know. I'm hoping that the owners are at least listening to their players, because the players are asking to be listened to.
I think that's the really curious part here, as we're talking to Kimberly Martin with us here on Golic and Wingo. It is, we're 4 days from a great article that you did for The Undefeated, where the title read, Drew Brees' backlash shows the NFL lip service won't be tolerated, and the players specifically being the ones to step up and ask for that very pointedly in the video that kind of kickstarted all of the events of the next 3 or 4 days. Kimberly, how surprised were you that the players were as direct with their demands in this instance as they were?
You know what the tipping point for me was actually seeing more white players, white coaches speaking up. Because as a black woman in America, as a black journalist, the issues that are being discussed right now are not new. They're the same issues that Kaepernick was kneeling about 4 years ago. They're the same issues that the black community has been talking about for decades. But the thing that opened my eyes was sort of like, okay, now we are seeing demonstrations. We're seeing people who are not black speaking up in larger numbers. And I think that's the difference. That's the difference that you've seen in the NFL. But that video that you mentioned with guys like Saquon Barkley and Odell and Patrick Mahomes, these are premier NFL stars. These are the faces of the NFL, and they are saying to the owners and the fans, what more do we have to say? Do we need to be victims of police brutality for you to hear us? That is very powerful and poignant, and I hope people watch that and understood what these guys are saying, because when they see videos of George Floyd or the Ahmaud Arbery killing or images of Breonna Taylor, they see themselves. And that's what that video was trying to convey. And that's something we haven't seen before. And that's why I think the players who are not black speaking out in droves, and that video, I think, were huge this week.
Kimberly Martin with us, our ESPN NFL reporter, talking about the things that have gone on in the NFL over the past week. And Kimberly, this is great and it's significant. And the NFL has been a part of what has been a national and, quite frankly, an international movement, which is, to me, stunning when you see so many protests overseas and the size of those protests in the wake of the killing of George Floyd. But we all know that it's June, and this is the thing of the moment right now for a lot of people. The NFL will not play a meaningful game until September. So what will the start of the season look like? What does the start of the season need to look like? Because it's easy to do it now, like when everyone's checking the box. As we said, Junior, you alluded to it, you're getting these emails from companies you didn't even know you once bought something from, giving their stance on what's happening.
Aren't we all? Yes.
Right? I mean, really? I was like, I need to unsubscribe because I haven't bought something from this company in 10 years.
I had no idea how Bed Bath & Beyond felt about these things.
Exactly. Because I really wanted to know. I mean, the bigger issue will be when the rubber meets the road, when there will be, we believe at some point, at least in certain stadiums, fans in the seats, players on the field before the game, ready to roll. How significant will it for the NFL, for lack of a better term, to bring the same energy, bring the same heat that they're doing now when it actually matters?
I'm glad you asked that, because I actually filed a column last night that's going to post on the Undefeated and ESPN.com later today about this very issue. We are 3 months away from the start of the season. I know with all the people that I've spoken to throughout the league, they expect record numbers of players to kneel in week one. And I'll be honest, that was surprising to me, because I wondered if people would want to just get rid of the steer away from the anthem controversy, only because the Drew Brees situation this week made it explode that took the focus away from the actual issues at hand, and took us back to a conversation from 4 years ago. But conversations that I had, people are expecting players to kneel. One GM told me he expects more white players than before the kneel. So this is the interesting thing. This is in the topic of conversation. This is on the media. We can't get away from it because, you know, a lot of us are stuck at home because of the pandemic still. It's in front of our eyes. Come September, the NFL can wait and say, okay, has the collective consciousness of America changed? Are the people who were once outraged 4 years ago about players kneeling, are they still going to be as outraged, or have they had some sort of understanding, awakening, epiphany? Or they could say, you know what, we're going to be proactive and meet with players to discuss different ways of protesting, so it's not the same issue, so that Trump is not again talking about kneeling players. Or they could decide, you know what, let's just not play the anthem altogether. Let's not have the players on the field. There's a number of ways the NFL can go. But when you talk about keep the same energy, being an ally, being supporting causes is not about convenience. It's about when it's not convenient, when you have to have difficult conversations. So the next 3 months to me are going to be crucial in examining, has the NFL really seen the light as people think?
Yeah, we'll find out. We will. You're hopeful from what we've heard, but you'll find out.
Time will tell.
Kimberly, welcome.
Yes.
Great to talk to you, and we look forward to talking to you
Thank
a lot
you
more down
guys.
The road, okay?
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Kimberly.
You got it. We'll talk to you soon.
Newest member here?
Absolutely.
Enjoyed having her on?
Absolutely. So, again, and we look forward to her article. It's coming up on The Undefeated. So I didn't even know that was coming. So it worked out very well. Coming up, one of the biggest stars in sports says he's tapping out. Again, we believe in it? Probably not. We'll get to all of that after this.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN2. Let's get you caught up on a little bit of what's trending. Kevin Harvick, your big winner in NASCAR over the weekend in their Cup Series race at Atlanta Motor Speedway. But the big story was what happened before the race. During their warm-up laps, the 40 cars pulled to a stop in front of the empty grandstands and shut off their engines so NASCAR president Steve Phelps could deliver a message over their radio sets. "Thank you for your time," Phelps said. "Our country is in pain and people are justifiably angry and demanding being heard. The black community and all people of color have suffered in our country, and it has taken far too long for us to hear their demands for change. Our sport must do better. Our country must do better." A black NASCAR official took a knee along pit road, mimicking a gesture used by protesters in tribute to former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick. All 40 crews stood on the wall in front of their pit boxes. The action from NASCAR followed a video in which multiple drivers, including Jimmy Johnson and Dale Earnhardt Jr., came together to vow to do a better job of addressing racial injustice in light of protests around the world. Meanwhile, the U.S. Soccer Federation will consider repealing a ban on players kneeling. Sources told ESPN's Jeff Carlisle that the board of directors will meet via conference call Tuesday to discuss the policy, and that meeting was made at the urge of USSF President Cindy Parlow Cohn. The board will likely take a formal vote on Friday. If the board votes to repeal the policy, it would take effect immediately, but it would still be voted on the next annual general meeting scheduled to take place in 2021. And in MMA, Conor McGregor says he's retiring.
No.
Again. McGregor tweeted his announcement over the weekend and told our own Ariel Helwani, who will join us later in the show, quote, "The game just does not excite me. And that's it. All this waiting around. There's nothing happening. I'm going through opponent options and there's nothing really there at the minute. There's nothing that's exciting to me." Conor McGregor, 31, said he had written a draft of his retirement tweet 2 weeks ago and was, quote, "just tired of the sport." McGregor also retired in 2016, and again in 2019. What's Trending is brought to you by Redbox. Redbox has the top entertainment when you need it most. Watch Margot Robbie take us into the twisted mind of Harley Quinn. Don't miss Birds of Prey. Visit Redbox.com for all the ways to watch.
All right, Golic and Wingo here with you, presented by Progressive Insurance. So our fine researcher trip on the show today gave me the numbers. Conor McGregor first retired on April 19th, 2016. He then fought on August 20th, 2016, 123 days later. So the retirement probably lasted, what, 90 days because he had to get back in shape to fight. He then tweeted his retirement on March 26, 2019. He next fought again on January 18, 2020, 298 days later. So at least it stuck for a little longer. How long is this one going to stay?
Well,
because I don't believe he's retired in any way, shape, or form.
None of us believe it. It's just when he and Dana White can figure out the next fight. So why don't we listen to Dana White, because he's right in on the whole game here. Dana White on Conor's retirement.
People have been locked up in their house for 3.5 months. People are walking around wearing masks. There's protesting. There's rioting. There's a lot of craziness going on right now. And I just think it's a weird time for a lot of people. And I'll say it again. I told everybody, you don't have to fight. Mm-hmm. We're not going anywhere. You can retire. You can say, I'm not going to fight. You can do whatever you want right now. Nobody is pressuring anybody to fight. Yep. And if Conor McGregor feels he wants to retire, you know my feelings about retirement. You should absolutely do it. Yep. And I love Conor. You know, Conor's one of the, there's a handful of people that have made this really fun for me. And he's one of them.
Listen, at the end of the day, Connor said he laid out a plan of how, where he thinks that you go with him fighting, and you know Dana White basically didn't listen to it. He wanted to fight Justin Gaethje now, and before Gaethje fought Nurmagomedov.
Khabib.
Thank you. But that's not the way Dana's doing it. He's putting Justin and Khabib together, and then the winner of that was going to fight Conor McGregor. McGregor didn't like that. He's been sitting around not fighting, so it's just a matter of when after that fight happens, probably in September, we think that's going to happen, and then all of a sudden Conor's name will come back up to fight the winner, and magically Conor will be ready to go.
Yeah, this is basically what we see in negotiations in all sports, which is players only have a certain amount of tools at their disposal to create leverage in a given situation when it comes to this stuff, and retirement has been when we've seen Conor go to the well on before. The difference is, you go to the well too many times, you become the boy who cried wolf, and also, as Dana points out, we've seen what's happened for Major League Baseball. When you try and operate the way you always have in a business setting in a time where that's less tolerated, I think the impact is far lesser. Like Conor McGregor doing this is probably going to have far less of an impact in a time period where the way we're consuming sports and the public demand for it in the usual ways isn't there the way Conor's effectively leveraged before.
Maybe, but does the UFC need Conor?
I think they need him. I think they would like Conor, but I don't think Dana White's jumping through hoops for Conor.
That's a separate issue.
But
I mean, he's jumping through hoops.
Conor is going to want to come back. Yeah. That's the point. And listen, when he comes back, he'll probably make a ton of money if it's the winner of that other fight that it goes to. I guess the bottom line is none of us think he's done fighting.
No.
This is turning into the Brett Favre retirement.
Correct. Look, he's selling it. What did Dana say about John Bone Jones? It could be great, but you got to be able to sell. Conor's trying to figure out how to sell that fight, right? One more time. And UFC could use it. There's no question about it. Coming up, a win for NASCAR on the track, but maybe a bigger win off of it. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2.